to just $10.99. Save 15% on Hillman Hardware and 50-pound Champion's Choice Salt Blocks, just $6.49. Find value for the work you do every day. Lane's Farm and Fleet. Be an original.
Welcome to Hour 2 of the Truth with Sherwin Hughes. I guess Blaine's Farm and Fleet, they were not going to be denied their commercial airtime. For the last hour, we discussed the problem with isolated incidents, which I'm not sure how isolated they are because they're predictable, of youth behavior, and it's mostly black young people. And their response to it is, I think they almost relish in the disruptions that they cause. And maybe this is something much deeper and much psychological. I know that a common response is, we got to blame the parents. Oh, the parents need to do better. Oh, I love that one. It's so simple. Well, it will just do better then. What if I applied that in other avenues? You may not be very well-versed in money and finances and investing. And I can just say, well, just invest your money. Just do better with your money. People don't know how. Telling a parent to do better, like, what is the standard for that parent? Whose standard is it? Because here's the thing. Some of us, because we're not involved in those kinds of below board, low vibrational activities, we think that we're the standard. No, we're not. We aren't. Because they have no trust for us. Here's what makes it worse. We have to convince those same people to vote, which I have stopped doing. I know that that might anger some of you, especially because the stakes are very high in this gubernatorial election. If someone has to ask me, if a grown human being with grandchildren has to ask me why they should vote, I will tell them not to. Don't. If you don't see the importance of it, and if you can't conceptualize a future by voting for an executive or a legislator that will create a better future through policy, then you miss all of your civics lessons, you miss all of your history classes, and you just don't want better for your community. Or what I should do is drill down a little bit more. If somebody wants better for their community, because everybody does, I'm going to ask them, well, exactly how do you plan on getting that if there's not a foundation of policy? Policy is not going to fix what is wrong right now. Like, we got to take some responsibility in the decisions that we make every single day. That's number one. Number two, what elected official is going to change the trajectory of your life? Why do we expect that? Well, Sherman, what has David Crowley done for me? Oh, I love hearing that one. What have you done for yourself? What has anybody done for you? Honestly, look at the people that send your phone, the people that called you last, the people that texted you last. When was the last time any of them did a damn thing for you? And these are your friends and these are your family that you talk to and interact with every single day. If they haven't done anything for you, why would somebody who was running for us, like, what do they owe you? We want to be able to create a policy environment that allows people to realize their full potential. If there are barriers, let's reduce them. If there's gaps in funding, let's even it out. But it's not going to change the trajectory of your life. Electing Tom Tiffany nor David Crowley is not going to change the attitude and behaviors of your kids. They're still going to act the exact same way. I could argue that some of the things that we may need, some of the critical investments in, like, social infrastructure and education, may suffer under one administration versus another. But overnight, you're not going to notice anything. Hell, you may not notice anything for a year or two, like literally nothing. While it is awful that Donald Trump is president for a number of reasons, some of y'all are fine. Now, you don't like him, and for good reason, but you didn't lose your job. I mean, stuff is a little bit more expensive, but I don't know how he can make stuff cheaper anyway. But if I have to explain to a person, especially a black person, where we were essentially created by law, black people had to have a legal definition before we had a human one. And I know that that's not right. That's not fair. But if you look at what policy and law can do for black people, like 10% of the Constitution is like, hey, let's make sure black people are human. Let's make sure that they can walk down the street. And there's obviously some pitfalls to that, too, because when civil rights legislation was really starting to take root and then we could enter into institutions of higher education, all of a sudden now you have tuition showing up. That's not a coincidence. And so what is our response to that? Telling the kids they don't need to go to college. They never want us to go to college anyway, and now we're over here affirming it. That's insane to me. Yeah, it's expensive, but you will not make a better investment than in yourself. I don't care how much it costs. And I stand on that because it's worth it. Because nobody else is going to invest in you like that. Sherwin, I don't want to spend $100,000 in myself, but you'll buy a $100,000 car when you only have $101,000 in your bank account. Make that make sense. Don't let me get off track here. I want to get to some kind of solution. Because you imagine, though, an earlier example that I gave, and it's highly unrealistic, but if you can, and some people just lack empathy. You can't, like, close your eyes and empathize with somebody else's situation. Like, those, what do they call sociopaths or psychopaths, people that are just so arrogant and narcissistic and they just can't empathize with other people. Imagine if we have a beautiful exhibition of our culture and our art. Maybe it's Juneteenth Day. Maybe it's Black Arts Fest, MKE. Maybe it's a number of different festivals that we have. They're smaller, but they take place pretty frequently. And a bunch of white kids from the suburbs made us have to shut down early because they were fighting. We'd hate those white kids. We would blame them, wouldn't we? Absolutely. So then think about when our kids go out to another community. It's a whole, West Dallas is another city. It's a whole nother suburb. They got their own mayor, their own common council. So our kids are going out there and then acting a fool and fighting. Big groups, big fighting groups, big old bunch of people just throwing fists, kicking, whatever. And then they got to shut down early. Imagine how you got to pack your cow up. You drove all the way down from Manitowoc, and you want to make sure that everybody can see your cow because you were proud of that cow. You raised that cow from a calf, and you want to bring the cow to the state fair, and then a bunch of black people make you have to go home early. Oh, I raised my cow to show my cow at the state fair now because of the black kids. I got to go home early. I'd be real mad. I'd hop on my cow, and I'd plow right through that group of blacks. I mean, that's they don't do that, thank goodness, because that would be terrible. Or what if the people at the state fair, and state fair is overwhelmingly white. There's blacks out there, but I mean, it's their thing. Kind of like Brewers games, which leads us to the YouTube question of the day. I'm real curious about this one. Because I noticed that the Brewers are having like a black day, a black heritage, black art, black something. Because black people don't go to Brewers games. That's fascinating to me as well, because baseball is probably one of the more diverse professional sports. Hell, a full third of baseball don't even speak English. They speak Spanish. Like, I don't think Big Poppy ever learned English. Hey, Big Poppy, hey! Who do you play for, the Red Sox, Big Poppy? It's very diverse, but for some reason, we don't really go to Brewers games. I haven't been there. I don't remember. 10 years, maybe? No, not that long. 2020. Probably 20. Did the Brewers play during COVID? They did. I might have went to a COVID game. Maybe 2021 I went to one. But I didn't buy tickets like somebody else had tickets, and they just didn't go or they couldn't go. And so I took their tickets. I can't remember. I don't know if I've ever paid for a Brewers ticket in my entire life. Ain't that wild? I did a so the Brewers had a – every so often they'll do a black night. They'll do like a Negro League night where the Brewers wear Negro League jerseys. And it's weird to me because it's a whole bunch of white people that don't care about that kind of stuff. But they did – oh, God, this is horrible. So this probably was the last Brewer game I went to. They did this trivia thing in the seventh inning where you pick a person out of the crowd. And it was all, like, orchestrated. They already knew the person they were going to pick. But they supposedly grab a person out of the crowd. And because they were showcasing, I don't know if it was Black Knight, Negro League Night, but 1017 The Truth was the highlight. So on the big screen, they put 1017 The Truth and our lineup and the times our show was on. It was actually pretty cool. They put the up on the big screen. And then I, being a host, Tori did it as well. Did Kyle do it? I think there was a number of hosts that did like this contest because they wanted to feature black people or Negro League. And it was something specifically black where they highlighted and focused on 1017 The Truth, our radio station, and our different shows. So it was my turn to do the the trivia. So they orchestrate this whole thing. You meet with a person. They go over the rules of the game, and they pick somebody out of the crowd. And I got a little note card, and I got to ask them questions. And then they got to figure out, like, if I show the jersey number, they got to say what player it belongs to. Very, very simple game, right? I public speak for a living. I have never been – I wasn't just nervous. I was petrified. American Family Field holds 40,000 people, and I'm standing on top of the – is that the dugout, the bullpen? It's got this wooden platform, and I'm looking up, and I had a damn panic attack. I had a panic attack that was so bad, so nobody could tell, thank God. I was so nervous, I had to bring a friend with me. I was like, oh, yeah, sure. We'll just show up at 7 o'clock. We got parking for you. And then come over into this office, and we'll walk in. We'll go through the game. And it's this white girl wearing heads. Okay, Sherman, here's a note card. You're going to read this, read this, read this. And I'm going to say this, this, and this. And I'm going to go like this. I'm going to make sure you're speeding up. Make sure you – and the person we're going to pick is going to be – I'm like, what is happening to my life? And I get up there, and they announce the game. And I stood up on the platform, which is this wooden roof they have over the bullpen. And I blacked out. I don't know what – all I knew – I don't even know what I said. It was so bad. Not that this has anything to do with black people going to Brewers games, but I'd never been so scared in my entire life. Like, when I think about that, it was a damn nightmare. I don't know what it is. I'm usually fine. I don't care about big crowds. I've never spoken in front of a damn crowd that big. But here's what's crazy. I still maintain that on my bucket list that I want to sing the national anthem at a Bucks game. Because I could do a lot better than some of the people we've heard sing the national anthem. A couple seasons ago, they had Flavor Flav singing the national anthem. And when I saw that, I was like, Jesus Christ, I know that I could do a better job than Flavor Flav. But holy smokes, did I freak out. And then so the game is over. It was only like 90 seconds, but it felt like 17 years. I felt like it took almost two decades to get through a 90-second segment. And I don't even remember. I remember one of the players' names because I had to announce the player's name if the lady, the quote-unquote volunteer from the crowd, and she was pre-selected ahead of time because you can't just pick somebody random out of the crowd at a Brewers game because those people get drunk. You can't do that. You can't just pick. They made it seem like it was random. It wasn't. It was some suburban white lady, probably, I don't know, mid-50s, probably from Greendale or Greenfield. And I think she even knew the answers to the questions that we gave her some fake prize, whatever. It was horrible. Just nerve-wracking. And so I asked the question on YouTube. Do you attend Brewers games? First choice is regularly. Next choice is occasionally. Next one is rarely. And then the fourth category is never. And I'd imagine that we've done some demographic stuff, but I think it may change from day to day. But for the most part, the people that participate in the YouTube chat that vote in these polls are majority African-American. But this, the responses that I see, the percentages are in line with what I suspect. We don't go to baseball games. In the times that I have gone, and there's only been a few, I only went to County Stadium. I didn't go to County Stadium for the first time until I was probably 20 or 21 years old because I could drink. I did not go as a kid because my parents didn't go. My parents knew which white people to avoid. And technically, I think they say it's Milwaukee, but really Miller Park, that's not Miller Park, American Family Field. It's like, it's kind of in West Milwaukee. And West Milwaukee is a notoriously racist place. In fact, when I was a freshman in high school, when we played West Milwaukee, I played for high school football for Brown Deer. I had never been called a nigger more times in the span of four quarters of football in my entire life. I was like, whoa, hey, you got every single play. And the refs heard it. We told the coaches. They were yelling it in the crowd. It was really, really hostile. And then something happened where we ended up fighting them, and they had to call and cancel the game. It was a whole mess. But this is when I learned something about white people, that if you are black and grew up in segregated Milwaukee and you've never had an abundance of experience with white people, I can understand why you would hate them. Just like I can understand, I'm not saying it's right, but I understand why white people that don't have interactions with and befriend and work with and collaborate with black people,
how you could hate us, because all you see is really terrible stuff. And here's the thing about the terrible stuff that you see about black people. That's literally us doing it. So it's not like it's fabricated. You don't got to make nothing up bad about black people. The problem, though, is when you see bad black behavior, I got to sit you down for a 300-year colonial history lesson to get you to understand why you may see some of these behaviors. And ain't nobody got that kind of damn time. I'm going to sit here and explain oppression and what it shows up like and what it looks like, and then the impact and influence of capitalism and segregation and reduced school funding and the funding flaw when it comes to education, which is interesting because everybody will talk about how the funding flaw is so bad for education, but don't nobody fix it. I've been hearing about the funding flaw for 30 years. We got to fix the funding flaw. Just tell us you're not going to fix it, because it allows you to give black schools less money. Black children are going to perform less, and you can push them to the menial jobs. That's basically, just tell us that. Stop lying to us. But if you haven't grown up and this had a bunch of like positive, you have to have a lot of interactions with people of a different race. And I'm very fortunate in that regard. But what I saw at 14 years old as a freshman in high school is white kids that were on our team, that were also my teammates, football teammates, that punched those other white kids even harder than we did, because the West Milwaukee teammates were denigrating us. It's almost like, we'll handle this. Like, they fought them harder. Very few black people, very few, get to have an experience where you are defended by somebody white. And this is also an unintended or maybe intended consequence of segregation. I told y'all a million and one times, I should not have graduated from high school. I literally should not have. I graduated with a 1.4 grade point average, but now when I go back with my adult mind, I got screwed over so bad by my teachers. They hated my absolute guts, and some of it was race. Some of it was, I was smarter than a lot of my teachers in high school. My God, did they hate that. Plus, I was bored to pieces. Like, I needed to be academically challenged, and I never was. And I hated school because it was stupid. But I found, I didn't cut school because, you know, I had Eugene and Emma to contend with, and I didn't want to hear their mouths if I got caught cutting school. So I went every day. But for me, school was more like social interaction and being cool with everybody and talking to people and getting to know people. Because Brown Deer back then was incredibly diverse. Now it's mostly black, but it was Puerto Rican kids. And I had a girl I went to school with from fifth grade named Rakishi. She was from Iraq. And I just knew all these different groups of people. And we're all kids, you know what I mean? And kids don't know how to hate each other. I mean, we'd get some strong direction and influence from our parents on who we're supposed to hate. But even if my parents told me to be cautious of the white kids, some of them were just so damn nice. I was like, Eugene and Emma, y'all got it wrong. First of all, they were from the Jim Crow South. White people would just kill you back then. They would just grab one of you off the street, and let's go string one up, and they would just murder you. So I can understand my parents wanting to instill a very healthy fear of white people in me. But what happened is, so I go to school like, oh, I got to be afraid of these white people. They're terrible. They're going to want to kill me. But then I'd ask Trisha Metzger for a pencil. She's like, here, Sherwin, take the whole pack. Or I forget my lunch money. Here, Sherwin, come share my pizza slice with me. I'm like, wait a minute. Aren't I supposed to hate you, Whitey? Might have needed some colored pencils for a particular assignment. Oh, Sherwin, it's your lucky day. My parents bought me 5 extra sets of colored pencils. Why did the white kids have so many more school supplies? They were like their own school store. Because for some reason, Sherwin never had a pencil. Because, pencils. I never had one. I'm always the kid that had to borrow a pencil. You can't ask another black kid for a pencil, that's for sure. They ain't got nothing. Black kids go to class, ain't got no books. I don't even know why we give all these damn backpacks away. They're not going to have the backpack by the second week of school. But I had so many positive experiences. So when I needed one class to graduate, I needed to get a ridiculously high grade on my algebra final exam. And I remember that final exam was the last exam of the exam period my senior year. So when I took that test, that, like, the school was empty. Everybody else was done with their exams, and they were all on summer break. And we were to graduate that Sunday. And I took that class was, I think the last day of school was a Thursday. And so I took my time with that algebra test because I knew I needed an impossibly high grade in order to pass the class. And if you didn't pass the class, well, you don't have enough credits in math. I would not have graduated from high school. So I'm panicking. And math is hard to study for. Either you know the concepts or you don't. So I tried my best to study. I was real worried about this, you know. But at the very least, I wanted to graduate from high school. So I took my test. I took my time. I was the last person to finish. And so I brought my test, my exam, up to my algebra teacher, Mr. Scherfinski, who I will admit I gave him hell because I had him my freshman year and sophomore year for whatever math freshmen and sophomores were required to take at Brown Deer. I used to act up in his class and just act a fool. He used to kick me out of class all the time. But then it came down to I needed, and I had him again my senior year. This teacher that I gave hell was going to be determining whether I got a high school diploma or not. I would say would have gotten my high school diploma on time or not, but I have a feeling I would have been so distraught by not getting my high school diploma, I maybe never would have gotten it. So I bring my test up to him. I said, Mr. Scherfinski, I'm going to sit with you while you grade. He was like, come on, have a seat. And he's got his answer key out. He's got my test on the right side, the answer key on the left. He's going through my answers. Number one, check mark, check mark, check mark. Because back then, teachers, they use red ink, which is trauma. Now you can't even, like, if you did bad on a test, it was so marked with red ink, it looked like it was bleeding. And he's just going down, just check, I'm getting everything wrong. And my eyes start to well up because, like, I'm not graduating. And I'm thinking to myself, if I'm Mr. Scherfinski, I would relish in the fact, because I gave him so much hell, I would relish in the fact that he would stop me from getting my high school diploma. So we get to the last question. I clearly failed. I didn't get the high grade. I needed like an A- on that test, and I failed it. And I just sat there, and I was ready to accept my fate. Now I'm starting to think ahead, like, what are my parents going to say? What are my other family members going to say? He said, I'm not going to do that to you. He said, I've seen you grow up and mature. He said, I'm going to give you whatever grades you need so you can go ahead and get your life started. At that moment, I couldn't hate white people. I couldn't, even if I wanted to, because if he was actually playing by the rules, he was like, no, you got to take this class over, blood. No, you go on a summer. You're not grad. You need to learn this math. I'm not sending you out into the world without knowing this man. But he did it anyway. And from that moment on, it changed me. So I was 18, just barely. But it encouraged me to find the good in everyone, including finding the good in myself. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. We'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
I once had somebody tell me that Frankie Valli is one of the best singers of all time. No way. Like, oh, Frankie Valli is better than all the Motown singers. To that, I vehemently disagree. I don't know enough. The Italians, like, you know, the Italians are, they're weird. I'll tell you what about the Italians. Oh, they make a fine mostaccioli.
I thought they loved Frank Sinatra.
Oh, they love him too. Well, everybody loves Frank. Frank was a real gangster. I like the old Blue Eyes. He was good. Every so often, I play a little Frank Sinatra when I'm in that mood. I sometimes think that I was born in the wrong era because there was something about the mid, late 1950s, early 1960s culturally in America. But also, I got to remember, if you're in the wrong part of the country and you're black in the 1950s, 1960s, it wasn't a good time. You know what I mean? If you were more, in a more enlightened or more liberal part of the country, like, I don't know, somewhere in Northern California. Or
San Francisco.
That's almost too much. Hippies are dirty.
What's your problem with hippies?
I just said they're dirty. And also, don't be fooled, because don't y'all hate boomers?
Who?
People just I don't care about boomers, because I look at the baby boomer generation as different. Like, those were, they were fighters, and they were crusaders, and they were protesters, and I think that they moved the needle forward, really, for all people, black people in particular. So our black baby boomers are heroes. White people, not so much. But here's the duplicity that I see. So the hippies all turn into, like, corporatists and turn into MAGA and turn into the boomers that y'all hate. What did y'all think the boomers were when they were kids? They were idealistic, and they were protesting the Vietnam War, mostly because they didn't want to go. They tuned in. They turned on. They dropped out. They were doing drugs. They were doing acid. They were humping each other all the time. The hippies used to hump, and they were dirty. Yuck. They're gross. No thanks. Not for me. But then they turned into the boomer. Like, that was literally their generation. So I don't romanticize the hippies. They're yucky. I'm driving in today. I'm fascinated by just regular stuff that I see. Like, I don't have to go and do exotic things to have stuff to talk about. Just regular stuff that you may come in contact with, or stuff that you just witnessed. And Milwaukee is the place that just keeps on giving. So much, so good. People watching here. That is one thing I'll say about the State Fair. Oh, man, the people watching, it's just like, you got to wonder, do these people know that it's the year 2026? I don't care what year it is. If you go to the State Fair, a large swath of the people, you can't tell them it's not 1982. They're convinced that it's Fast Times at Ridgemont High just came out. Like, they're just convinced they're stuck in the 80s. But you know the rural people. I'm going to talk about the rural people in a second, because I say build the data center. If they oppose data centers being built in their backyard, then go find another backyard. We need the data centers. We also can't be hostile to technology, but I'm going to talk about that in a second, because I've got a pretty well thought out set of arguments that I'm going to illustrate to you all about the data centers. But so if people work out, and some people are weird, they work out before work. I think that's a compulsion. It's weird. Some people deal with their problems by working out, and then they try to shame everybody else because they post the gym pictures. Shout out to people that, you know, are proud of their progress, but it should be personal. That's my opinion. Because my thing is, if you got a really dope body, you know what makes your body even doper? If you just post pictures of just you, but not in the gym. Because then we get even more like, man, like, oh my God, how do they get such a nice body? If I see the gym pics, then I know how you got the nice body. But how about going to the gym and never telling anybody? Did you ever think about that? You ever think about going to the gym and not photographing it, not spending a whole bunch of time in the mirror? Never understood that, but whatever. And gyms are gross, too. I'm not sure what's more disgusting, hippies or gyms. Gyms are filthy. Yuck. And then you got the women that wear stuff in the gym, and then they get mad at you if you look. Come on, your butt cheeks are hanging out, lady. And you're doing squats. Sherwin, can you come spot me? But don't look. Don't you pervert. Don't look. But if you're one of those people, and I know quite a few, that take their fitness very seriously, and they work out before they go to work. Like, oh, I hit the gym at 4:30. Yuck. But whatever. But when they work out before work, they bring their clothes. They shower. Get dressed at the gym, they go to work, okay? They prioritize their working out because it's a part of their life. It's their routine. They wake up early, they go to the gym, they work out, they sweat very much a lot, they take their shower, they get dressed, they go on to work, right? And then there's the people that they bike. Like, it's a part of their fitness routine, but that's also how they commute. Now, they may not bike every single day, but if they work out or exercise 3 or 4 days a week, they'll ride the bike. You understand how hot it gets sometimes in the summertime in Milwaukee? And I always found this just, it's vile. I had a teacher in high school that was a biker, Mr. Backus. He was like a journalism teacher. I actually loved journalism very early on. In fact, I wrote for the school newspaper, and one of the columns that I would publish in the Brown Deer Bullet. Think about that. Damn newspaper was called the Bullet. You can't do that anymore. When we were in middle school, our mascot was literally a speeding bullet. Talk about something that didn't age well. Now, they eventually changed it to the Falcon. But our newspaper was the... Well, in middle school, I think it was the Bullet. In high school, it was the Falcon. But here's my column that I would write is I would publish whose parents are out of town and who would be having parties out in the school newspaper. It was, and they let me publish it, which was just dumb. But Mr. Backus rode his bike every single day. He had his little bike helmet. He had it in the classroom on his desk. And he rode. He smelled so bad. Here's the thing that I don't understand. I don't want to limit this to a race. There are some cultural differences in hygiene. I don't know if you guys are ready to have that conversation, but it might get a little, the conversation might get a little stinky. It's 95 degrees and you're commuting from Wauwatosa and you work downtown and you're riding a bike and you've sweated the entire 5 or 6 miles riding your bike and you just go and you sit in a damn conference room and you're sitting in these closed quarters with your coworkers. That is absolutely disgusting. And they have no foresight to think like, wow, this is gross. I'm going to stink. But if you go to the gym before work, like those people that prioritize their exercise and their fitness, they know to take a shower after the workout. But for somebody that rides their bike, there's other experiences. I don't want to say too much because it's pretty close to home where people ride their bikes to work and they sweat and you're disgusting. Like there's no concept of like, oh, man, I just sweated. And they're wearing like a shirt and tie on a bike. They got the pants leg rolled up because I guess you don't want to get the chain oil on your leg. So that's why they roll up one pants leg. And it's disgusting to me. Like, come on. I'll take a break, come back. Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons is like on the list of greatest all-time music performers is 3,827. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
This is weird because this obsession with a local concern is just, it's weird. There used to be a thing called local control where, you know, different areas and different regions would have whatever their issues are, political issues or social issues. And if you're from somewhere else, you're like, oh, okay, well, that's their issue in that town that they live in. Very rarely do we take an issue that is a local gripe and then make it everybody's issue. I never understood that. There's so much to worry about in your own backyard. Adopting somebody else's issue with AI data centers. We need our kids to know how to read. But some of it is this, though, too. People are afraid of artificial intelligence because they don't know what it's going to mean. They look at the worst case scenario, but that's with any new technology. Anything that we are not familiar with, we are afraid of it first. We always think the worst case scenario. But here's the thing with AI, the worst case scenario is really, really bad, but we don't have any evidence of that. And we can always panic about what something could potentially be. We have nuclear weapons. Thank God they haven't been used since World War II. They're dangerous, obviously. But worst case scenario is, oh, America's not going to make it. The world is not going to make it until 1972 because somebody's going to use a nuclear weapon. Nobody's going to use a damn nuclear weapon. It's a good threat. I think we use them as deterrents, but nobody's going to use a nuclear weapon because of what it'll do to the global economy. It'll kill too many consumers. Nobody wants to lose their entire economy just to blow up another country. And then that country is going to blow you up, too. So it was something that was blown entirely out of proportion. But we didn't know. We were afraid. We were afraid of this new technology harnessing the power of the universe to blow up a bunch of Japanese people. AI is the same. We're afraid for what it may mean. So we think that if we oppose progress, If we oppose technology, then that will stop it. Only thing you can't stop is time. When automobiles, this is before they were mass produced and they were being made on a limited scale, there were literally people. The prevailing wisdom in the United States is nothing will ever replace horses. Like, ah, this automobile thing is just a fad. No, seriously, that's a real thing. The media at the time, the newspapers at the time, they bashed automobiles. How ridiculous is this moving carriage? They can fit several people and move them from one place to another place. Because back then there was no roads, there was no highway infrastructure. They thought that cars were just this weird new mode of transportation that would only be for a very select few people, very wealthy people, and it would never catch on. Well, clearly they were wrong. And the opposition to data centers, I think, is something similar to that sentiment. We're afraid of new technologies and what it may mean. But what I can't understand is if you live in the city of Milwaukee and another community somewhere else that we know does not care at all about the city of Milwaukee nor its people. In fact, they demean and they stereotype the people here. Now, all of a sudden, we have concern for them and them building or having a data center built in their community. Did they say anything when they were gutting the African-American community, took away 8,000 homes and businesses? I can draw a direct line from the poverty that exists today to the entrepreneurship and the home ownership that was destroyed in the 1940s to build these damn freeways. And some of the freeways were never even completed, but they tore all the houses down. Like, oh, yeah, we're going to build a freeway. Psych. Are you going to rebuild the houses? Nope. Think the rural communities were concerned about that? They wanted our houses demolished because they wanted to be able to get to the city with those highways that literally gutted our community. They relished in it. They wanted it. Yeah, yeah. Build a freeway so I can get to Milwaukee faster. I don't care who we hurt. But for some reason, you know, also think about these rural people. They have opposite political interests in us, but all of a sudden, and it's really interesting because the socialists have taken AI data centers as like one of their signature issues. Like, come on, you guys. Like, seriously. And they know, and they should know, that in some of those rural areas, and maybe it's a way for them to have conversations with rural people, for them to introduce themselves and their brand of political organizing to people that have opposite political interests. Rural areas in Wisconsin are Trump supporters. They are. But I also think that there's not that much difference between someone who is MAGA and someone who upholds the tenets of democratic socialism. And oftentimes they're related. They're in the exact same family. But the issue of data centers, I don't think that should be a concern of ours because look how much data we use. Our phones, our Gmail accounts, the photographs that we take, all that stuff's got to get stored somewhere because there's not a corresponding decrease in the use of data. You're not telling people, hey, maybe we should use data less. Maybe we should send less text messages. Maybe we should take less pictures of our food and less pictures of or less videos of concerts. This is the part I don't get. I don't get a lot of things. You go to a damn concert, don't even watch the concert, but you record the entire thing. You go to a concert and you see all these phones that are lit up because people are recording the show. When are you going to go back and watch a 3-hour concert on your phone? How about experiencing actually being there instead of taking up all this damn gigabytes on your phone? And that data's got to get stored somewhere. So I just find it disingenuous. I'm going to talk to Al first. Al, you're on 101.7 The Truth. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Hope everybody's having a wonderful day. See, yeah, what y'all have to understand, the people who voted for Donald Trump has their integrity is very poor white trash, okay? So that's probably, you know, anything that deals with racism always ended in rape. That's why everything went up. See, the mindset is very 211, still reserved. You know, that's why a lot of their daughters and their kids grew up to be junkies and little whores, okay? But when you bring up stuff with black people and their kids, that's in-house. See, a lot of stuff, see, you got a different kind of parents, see, because, see, you should know how to conduct yourself when you get out in public. And I don't mean acting like a monkey who broke away from the cage. It was something that was instilled in you. And we got to stop saying what parents don't have no money, because parents got money for eyelashes, hair, 3-5, buying all them raggedy-used cars. And then we say they don't invest in themselves. At the time, they had the higher center, Maximus, You had the Woman Force of America, where they had, when they would help you get an associate degree, they would help you get a daycare. It was a lot of things, but they was not using it. Okay? So we should not say, well, you know, they don't have no money. They have ways of getting money, because I remember I went through some of those programs, got money. And some of the people in the program said they were trying to get to their baby daddy with the 20-inch rims. Okay, so we got to stop doing that. Y'all kids is out of control because you're not raising them. That's the problem. You're not taking time to put them in activities and find out what they choose to be. Some of y'all use CPS because you don't want to beat your kids. And I stand by capital punishment because there ain't nothing that come out of my desk going to tell me what they ain't going to do in my house. And I'm walking around here scared when I can hit you in your mouth with a fist and a broomstick. And y'all can say it's slavery, but when you get out in them streets and them police put their hands on you, who you calling? You calling your mama. You calling your daddy. And if your daddy ain't around, goddamn it, find him. That's who you calling, because they're the only people who going to come bring the devil out. So parents, do what you got to do. And if you do everything right and they get out there in the streets and F up, that's on them, and that's the consequences of their own goddamn actions. So let's stop it and push forward. Have a good day and have a tropical buzz ball and a shot of gin tonight. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Tropical buzz ball and a shot of gin, but stop there. Don't drink more than that. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. We'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
I'm a firm believer in progress and in technology and seeing how far the human mind can go. I am not one who is ever going to be in favor of stifling progress. I also know that progress comes with some costs. I think that the automobile and all of the transportation options that we have has revolutionized the entire course of human history. But a drawback is pollution, especially when you use fossil fuels. But would you rather not have shipping and trucks and ships to bring goods and commodities from one part of the world to the next? Well, of course you would. We wouldn't enjoy the lifestyle that we enjoy if it wasn't for transportation and logistics and shipping and being able to move things over the road and across oceans. But there's going to be some consequences to that. And what we hope is that we can mitigate some of the consequences, or at least the benefit that we are getting from these technological improvements and these new processes can far outweigh whatever the drawbacks are. And I think that just being obstinate and just opposing a technology is nonsensical as much as it is a non-starter. That's number one. Number two, if there's a local issue in a rural community that has nothing but the greater benefit to the state of Wisconsin, our economy, or technological advancement, screw their local issue. You can't stop progress. Move somewhere else. What do you want me to do? We couldn't stop progress when it steamrolled its way through our neighborhood and our community, but now all of a sudden we feel sorry for these rural farmers that I could say are partially responsible for why we got Donald Trump 2.0. A major AI data center is fundamentally different from a typical warehouse or an industrial building. It represents billions of dollars of capital investment in the region, creates large construction ecosystems, generates permanent high-skilled jobs, expands the technology sector, and potentially attracts additional businesses that want to locate near advanced computing infrastructure. So because people don't know a lot about the details of these data centers, they can capitalize off of misinformation. First and foremost, what are we going to do to stop the spread of misinformation? Because lies and falsehoods spread faster and are more believable than the truth. Because if people are afraid and if they're nervous, they don't know what AI is and what it might ultimately turn into, you can scare people. You can scare those people in those small towns and those rural communities that this is, in fact, the boogeyman. You can scare them, and they'll be opposed to it. but it's a technology that we all use. It's crazy because somebody might be going into some rural community to rail against this AI data center, but will use ChatGPT for their damn talking points. Microsoft said it expects to spend $4.7 billion locally between 2024 and 2028 on hyperscale construction in Wisconsin. Ain't nobody else spending that kind of money here. Who's spending $5 billion in Wisconsin? Other than Milwaukee and the weirdos in Madison, it's not really a lot here. We need to do something with this land. And I know what you guys are going to say, oh, and about the electricity and the infrastructure. There's a fix for that. Oh, and they're going to use all the water. Some of these cooling systems are self-contained, so your water argument is thrown out the window. Let's talk to Emil. You're on 101.7 The Truth. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Sean?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
Hey, I hear you loud and clear, though, and I think, but I do disagree with a certain aspects of what you just said, particularly as it relates to why we should be concerned. I do agree that we shouldn't just be generally concerned in Milwaukee about what happens in certain places as it relates to the environmental factors, right? I do believe the people best situated to decide those are the people who are located there. That being said, and I think this is where the miseducation and just the misinformation kind of goes a long way because people start conflating things, right? There are things that I think we all should be, I don't know if concerned is the word, but at least be informed on, right? So you're half right. We are the demand, right, to a large extent. Every stream, every ChatGPT question, like you said, right, every photo that we back up, right, needs a place, right, to go to. And data centers have existed, and people need to understand this. Data centers have existed for as long as the internet and the cloud has existed, right? But that being said, there is no denying the scale, the rate of change in terms of capacity building across that's being driven by AI technologies. So that's something that we can't run away from. But here's why I think places like Milwaukee can't sit out. The data center may be in places like Port Washington or Racine, but the bill's going to show up on the north side, right? Because of electricity, same utility, because of how electricity gets billed, right? People have to understand this. You may not see this on your bill, but there are three components to every electric bill that you get. You get the actual dispensation, the manufacturing of the electricity, right? The plants and all that stuff, the transmission and the delivery. We Energies controls the manufacturing of the electricity, the generation and the delivery. The American Transmission Company, which isn't necessarily under the purview of Wisconsin and is federally regulated, right, controls the transmission. So transmissions will be, you know, the poles and the things you see on the highway. All of that stuff in normal times, right, whenever there's an expansion, that gets split across customers all around the state, right? Now, people need to also understand that regulators – and We Energies and even the public commissions that have been set up by the government, you know, to regulate utilities aren't just sitting by. So half the time when I see some of these conversations happening, it's like y'all responding to like old information, because if you were paying attention, you would realize that, you know, the utilities commission set up has already, right, especially as it relates to certain deals, made certain changes to how some of this new generation cost is going to be spread. If you're paying attention, you understand that the FERC has told, you know, transmission companies in a region, hey, why shouldn't we put this cost on big data companies? You would also understand that We Energies is also having conversations with these companies, right? And again, I'm not trying to say that these things are all going to lead to a situation where we don't get to bear the cost. But I think understanding that gets us to understand what are we fighting for and how are we fighting for it, right?
Yeah, we got to leave it there, buddy, because I got to take a break. All right. Your point is well taken.
Our problem, take it easy.
All right. You too. If we are going to greatly benefit from this technology, maybe not so much now, but into the future, then the cost should be spread out. That's number one. Number two, regulation can require these AI data companies and manufacturers of these gigantic warehouses to have a disproportionate amount of the cost on the transmission and the increased energy use fall on them. We're going to pick this back up for hour three. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.